All right. Hello, Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Skyline Studio, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago. And we're here until 4 a.m., as we are every weekday night slash morning, 11 to 4 a.m. And coming up a little bit later on, we're going to talk with the co-owners of Chicago Fireboat Tours. Really fascinating stuff. They've got a historic flagship fireboat that they use for their tours. We're going to talk about that and some of the other great things that they do. We're going to be talking about how the Onion sometimes predicts things and they're always right. And we're going to talk about summer camp memories and much more and the best tours of Chicago and a lot more. 312-981-7200 is the phone number if you want to get a hold of us. You can follow us on Twitter and Facebook at Nick D Show. And you can subscribe to our podcast. It's easy. It's simple. It's free. If you can't listen live, you can listen via podcast. You can go to iTunes. You can go to WGNRadio.com. Check out our podcast, too. To kick off the show, I'd like to welcome back somebody that I really am very fond of, Frankie Previtt, who is an Oscar-winning songwriter who was in Frankie and the Knockouts and much more. Has written some great songs, including the one that we just heard, and he's got a song called One World, which is a timely anthem for what's happening in the world right now. And we thought it would be fun to catch up with Frankie again. Frankie, how you doing?
I'm doing great, Nick. First of all, I just want to say to you, 35 years.
Yeah.
Happy anniversary.
Thanks, man.
WGN.
Thanks, man.
Wow. That's pretty impressive, dude.
Yeah,
that's
no, it's cool. Yeah, I've been here 35 years. I've been with WGN for 35 years. Celebrated it a couple of weeks ago. It's pretty amazing. I appreciate that, man. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
All right. So, how are you dealing with this pandemic? You're everybody's stuck inside. How you dealing?
I'm dealing okay. You know, just like the rest of the world, you have to learn this side of normal. So this is a new venture for everyone. It's, you know, I was doing some other interviews and having, you know, some of the interviewers ask me about, you know, how are you as a musician and your friends, how are you getting along and how are you going to make out after this? And it's really affecting America. And I said, no, it's not really only affecting America. This is really about we've become one world. And I realized after I said that I had written a song called One World.
Yeah.
And back in 1989, after I won the Academy Award for Time of My Life, I got chosen as one of America's 25 songwriters to do a songwriting summit in Moscow. And it was the first time ever United States and Russian songwriters actually worked together. So I went there with like Barry Mann and Mike Stoller and Cyndi Lauper and Desmond Child and Diane Warren. These are like really like the top of the creme de la creme of songwriters. So
yeah.
I felt really blessed that I was, you know, added into that group. So while I was there, 25 of us wrote with 25 Russian songwriters with interpreters. And so really the common denominator was the music. And we realized that connecting, meaning Pamela Philip Olin, who is the other songwriter on the song, and I wrote with two Estonian songwriters. And one of them, Sergei Manukian, was a blind writer. And when we got there, everybody was listening to everybody's songs. And then Sergei walked in. And he sat down at the piano, and for some reason, Ray Charles came out of him. And it was like everybody was like, wow, we want to write with Sergei. So they said, you got to put your name in a hat, and whoever you draw out, that's who you're writing with. So luckily, I you know, drew Sergei's name, and the song One World got born.
That's amazing.
So when we came back, Columbia Records, we had written 50 songs in 9 days. And Columbia Records picked 10 songs, and they did a record called Music Speaks Louder Than Words. And on that record, I was blessed. I got two songs on that record, one that Cyndi Lauper recorded, and the other one, Earth, Wind, and Fire recorded, called One World.
Yeah.
And so you know, nothing really ever happened with the record because there was a regime change at Epic and Columbia. And so the new regime said, well, you know, this is the old regime's, you know, project, so we're going to shelve it. So the songs of all these great songwriters never really got heard.
Wow.
And so I thought, you know what, I'm going to take this song and I'm going to re-record it with some really, really great artists and put it out and give all the money to charity. So I started thinking about the charities to give to and realizing that, you know, musicians were really hurting. There was no place to play. Everything was closed and actors, this Broadway closed. And I said, you know, okay, those are two really, really good charities. And then I realized that the First Responders Children Foundation was another one to give to. And so I was getting ready to release this song. And then Black Tuesday happened with all the social injustice and unrest in America. And that gave me a chance to take a breath and realized that the picture I was painting of all these charities wasn't completed. And so we added the LDF, which is the NAACP charity. And so we have those four charities to help fight racial injustice as the fourth charity. And so the song is kind of like a We Are the World type of message, but that we all live in one world. But we had to change the lyrics to the second verse from what we wrote in Moscow. And so in the changing of the lyrics and after the pandemic, you know, there was no pandemic when we were in Russia. There was social injustice, but it wasn't to the level it was recently. And so that song was, the common denominator was Russians and Americans writing together, and the common denominator was the music. And now this version is more about, you know, what we're going through now with the pandemic and then the social injustice. We rewrote the second verse, and it says in the second verse of the song, this day will pass. Hang on, my friends. I know we long to dream again. So with those words, you know, you look at the pandemic, we long to dream again. We long to dream about going out to a theater, going to see a group, going out to Broadway, going to a restaurant, going to the beach. And then you look at the other side of that coin, we long to dream again. Well, that's something that Martin Luther King said, yeah. You know, I had a dream. And so when you say those words, yeah, the lyric kind of crosses both sides of the fence.
Yeah.
And so to me, you know, the song says that we're all in this together, and brothers and sisters, we got to make this work together.
Yeah.
And so it's that kind of a song.
Yeah. All right, listen, Frankie, hold on, okay?
Sure.
Frankie Previte is with us, a great Oscar-winning songwriter and singer, member of the band Frankie and the Knockouts, and we're talking about his song One World, which you can check out. The website is oneworldoursong.com, oneworldoursong.com. And we'll get back to the conversation in a minute.
Someone like you, someone like me, dreaming a dream of what could be. Do we believe? Well, maybe we do. It all comes down to me and you. No matter who we are, there's only one world, one right. Love to share.
Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. And we are live in the Skyline studio here in downtown Chicago. Frankie Previte is my guest, and he wrote that song, One World, which you can check out at oneworldoursong.com. Tell me about the recording of that version, Frankie.
You know, when I called Pamela Olin, the other writer, and I asked her, told her what my thoughts were about giving these the song A New Life and donating all the download money and all the proceeds that we can get donated to these charities. So I got a guy that is just a really great songwriter and producer. His name is John Gillotin. He wrote New Attitude for Patti LaBelle.
Mm.
And so John put the track together and said, you know what, I'm going to call out to some of my friends to sing on it. So obviously everything that you hear was recorded at home. These different singers and musicians did everything from home and sent the files to John.
Yeah.
And then he produced this. So you have one of the lead singers. There's five lead singers on the track. And Michael Mayo sings with Herbie Hancock. And Ellis Hall is the original lead singer from Tower of Power. So you have some Grammy Award-winning people on the track. Bill Schnee actually mixed the track. He's like an 11-time Grammy nominee, a great producer-mixer himself. So there's some serious people that donated their time and effort. You know, we call it Voices for One World. That's the name of the group that, you know, put this together. But yeah, they're all, you know, unsung heroes donating their time to help others. You know, that's something very special these days.
That's really great. So this trip that that you went on to Russia, it sounds really amazing. And how did that actually come together?
This guy named Alan Roy Scott got together with BMI and with Columbia Records, and he said, you know, I have an idea of doing a songwriting summit. It was the first time that Russia and United States did this, and the Soviet Union was going through a change where they were starting to loosen up and allow Estonia to become, you know, more of a freedom with the people, and it was Glasnost, I believe it was that era. And so it was the first adventure of those two organizations putting this together. Alan Roy Scott was kind of the main point person that put it together. And then he did like three or four more after that, one in Cuba and some other countries, and, you know, taking people, you know, Kenny Loggins and different stars to these different, and songwriters to these different countries to do others, but this one was the first to Russia.
Wow, that's really amazing. So the translator, you had translators in the room. What was that like under those circumstances? What was that like?
It wasn't as hard as it sounds, because a lot of these Russian songwriters, and you know, I was also writing with some of the top performers. Igor Nikolaev, you know, was like a big star in Russia, and they knew a lot of English. And I said to them, how is it that you know so much English and we don't know Russian?
Yeah.
And they said, because we listened to American music and we learned a lot of how to speak through learning the lyrics to the American songs.
Oh, I see.
That was very interesting. That was very interesting.
Yeah, it's so interesting to see how music is consumed and appreciated in other countries. You know, especially countries where, you know, like English is not the first language.
Well, you know, music speaks louder than words. You know, it's our common denominator. And so it just kind of connects people, and it has its own power. So I couldn't imagine the world without music, you know, and that's why it's so sad now that, you know, musicians have no place to play. And the other side of normal is going to be much different than we remember it. It's going to take time. But, you know, with some patience and a little bit of ingenuity, you know, you're going to see people doing concerts and drive-ins. In fact, we're doing some PSAs because there's so many drive-ins that are popping up all over the country. We're having utilizing. We did a video of One World. It's really, really cool. So we're connecting with drive-ins all around the country, and they're embracing us to play the song with the video before people actually see the movie. So it's another way of spreading the word, you know, just trying to do unique and different ways to market the song to get it out to the people.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's you go to the site and there's four different organizations, charities, and anywhere from a dollar on up, and you get a free download of the song. So we're giving the song away.
Yeah.
To help you. Help people.
Yeah. So people should download it and give as much as they can. And the website again is oneworldoursong.com. oneworldoursong.com.
Right.
did you, when you thought about this, when you said we all live in one world, I mean, the song is from, you wrote it, you said 1989?
It was written in 89, yeah.
And it just
in Moscow,
and it popped into your head like as soon as you said that, you were like, "This would be a good thing to do is record this thing again and get it out there and give all the money to charity." And that was the first thing that popped into your head.
Well, you know, I had done other things for charities, like the demos of "Time of My Life" and "Hungry Eyes." For the past 25 years, I've been selling those demos on Facebook, Dirty Dancing demos, and I give all of that money to pancreatic cancer, to the Pancreatic Cancer Action Network in Patrick Swayze's honor.
Right.
So I was used to trying to look for ways to help because I've been blessed. You know, this happened to me was like my lottery ticket. I had $100 in my bank account when I wrote Time of My Life. So it really, you know, turned me around and it was beyond my dream what happened to me. So when these things happen in the world, I look for opportunities to try to let my music help, and seeing all my friends out of work and wondering how they're going to pay their bills and what's going to go on with music and acting and children. And these are all part of our future.
Yeah.
And so I thought this was a good way of helping.
Yeah. You had $100 in the bank when you wrote that song?
Yes. I was on MCA Records after, you know, Frankie and the Knockouts, Jimmy Einer sold us to MCA, and MCA kind of fumbled that third record, making the point. And, you know, I was home writing songs, and out of the blue, Jimmy Einer called me up and said, "I got this little movie, and I want you to write a song for it." I said, "Jimmy, I'm really too busy. I'm trying to get a deal." And he goes, "Make Time, it's going to change your life." And I'm thinking, yeah, well, you kind of did that a couple of years ago when you sold your label. And he goes, "No, I got a good feeling about this movie." And I go, "So what's the name of the movie?" He goes, "Dirty Dancing." My hand went to my forehead, and I went, "Oh, my God, Jimmy's doing porn." And he goes, no, it's a good little movie. Johnny meets Baby in the Catskills. And the father doesn't like the kid, but they end up together. That was it. That's all I knew.
Yeah.
So I called John DeNicola, who I wrote Hungry Eyes with. And that Hungry Eyes was on my demo reel to try to get another deal that nobody liked. And I said, "John, we got an opportunity to write for this movie." I said, "The good news is we're going to write a song. The bad news is it has to be 7 minutes long because it's the last scene of the movie." And so he sends me a track. I'm sitting in the car on the Garden State Parkway heading up to the studio, and I put the cassette in my dashboard in 1987.
Yeah.
And I go, "Nin, nin, nin, I'm of my life, nin, nin, I'm of my life." What the hell am I saying? I'm scribbling Time of My Life on an envelope, and the man upstairs wrote the rest of the song because I had no idea what that movie was about.
Yeah. Well, it obviously turned out great. Frankie, hang on, okay?
Sure.
Frankie Previte is with us, Oscar-winning songwriter, and he was the leader of a great band called Frankie and the Knockouts, and, you know, wrote the classic song, "I've Had the Time of My Life," for Dirty Dancing, which has gone on to obviously become a classic. So he's got a song called One World that is available for download. Donate some money. It goes to great causes to help people out around the world during this pandemic and what's happening. And it's oneworldoursong.com, oneworldoursong.com. More coming up on WGN. Right. Nick DeGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Skyline studio here until 4, and we're going to talk with the co-owners of the Chicago Fireboat Tours and tell you all about these great tours that they do with an actual fireboat that has a lot of history to it, and much more. We're going to talk about When the Onion Was Right, and some other great summer camp memories and things like that. Phone number is 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. Frankie Previte is my guest. He is an Oscar-winning songwriter and led the band Frankie and the Knockouts, and it's always great to have him on the show. Frankie, welcome back.
Well, thank you for having me, Nick. You know what's kind of cool? We're thinking about different people that have stepped up to help, and when you said Frankie and the Knockouts, Tico Torres was the drummer from Frankie and the Knockouts, who's been the drummer from the beginning of the band Bon Jovi.
Yeah.
And so I do these celebrity circles, I call them, where I take a little bit of the song and then I have a celebrity endorse that, you know, the song and the causes that we're, you know, trying to support. So Tico has stepped up and he's done the celebrity circle for us. Christine Ebersole and Michelle Green from L.A. Law. So a lot of people are Siobhan Fallon, who is SNL, and she was on. She just did a bunch of things, you know, movies and things. Men in Black.
Yeah.
And so it's great having the people that were actually, you know, musicians and actors. And the Children's Fund is sending us one with a bunch of children who are involved with their parents or doctors or firemen, you know, to be in the celebrity circle with us. So it's nice to see that people are stepping up and realizing that, you know, this is the time to help and, you know, help us to heal others is kind of what I say.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Again, oneworldoursong.com, oneworldoursong.com. Hey, let's talk a little bit about that Russian trip again. What about you had an experience in a Russian train? Can we talk a little bit about that?
Who told you that about that?
It's a guy named Kenjamin is the culprit. So tell us, can we tell you a little bit about the Russian train incident?
Yeah, the Russians, we were filming. We filmed the whole thing, and we were trying to make a documentary out of this first summit. And right at the end, when we were leaving Moscow, and we were on a midnight train to Leningrad, and the Russians decided that they wanted to take all of the reels of film, and they weren't going to let us have them. They wanted to keep them.
Oh.
And so here we are in the middle of a snowstorm with snow, like, you know, 3 feet of snow. They stopped the train in the middle of the night, and they came on the train, and they were like, okay, where is your identification? Where is, you know, your paperwork? And I'm like, well, it's in my luggage. And they said, well, get it. And I said, well, my luggage is in the luggage car. They took me and they threw me off the train.
Oh, man.
I had to walk in like 3 feet of snow all the way back to the luggage car. They threw me up into the luggage car, and I had to go through hundreds of bags to find my bag and to show them, you know, that I had, you know, my paperwork and my passport and stuff. So it was a trip.
Wow.
It was quite a trip.
That's,
and, you know, they found stuff that, you know, we had picked up in Moscow, like little trinkets, and they were like, oh, you can't have that. And they would take that, you know, different stuff from us that they didn't want us to have. And, I mean, there was a lot of strange things, you know, that went on, but it was just a different culture, and we were guests. So, you know,
yeah,
you went along with the program.
Yeah, and at that time, we're talking like 89, at that time, the Cold War was at like a peak at that time.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, geez. Wow.
So, yeah, it was quite a trip.
Yeah. Now, you've toured all over the world, right, Frankie? Do you have favorite places that you go to?
You know, I didn't play all over the world. I played all over America a lot.
Okay.
You know, I did go to the Soviet Union and Finland and England and places like that, but not as many places as I would have liked to play. Like Germany would have been cool to play, and Italy, and some places. I'm Italian, so that would have been cool.
Yeah.
But in America, I enjoyed playing a lot of different cities that embraced this. Chicago was a really good town for us that embraced Frankie and the Knockouts. I remember playing there with Loverboy.
Yep, that's the first time I saw you guys. You opened for Loverboy, and I was at that show, and it was terrific.
Awesome. No, I'm just saying there's a lot of places, but there are places that stick out more than others. Chicago was one of them.
Did you enjoy being on the road? Did you like those experiences being on the road?
You like them until that last, maybe week, and after you've been on the road for 3 months, and you're longing for, to get back home and sleep in your own bed, because sleeping on a bus after a while, your kidneys are bouncing.
Yeah.
And every town is, you finish gig and you get on the tour bus and you drive to the next city, and then you're getting off and you're doing radio interviews, or you're doing promos, and you're going to dinner with a winner from some radio program that ran a contest. So I wouldn't change my life for anything. I've been blessed, but it's a lot of work, but it's a lot of fun. The best part of being on the road is being on stage and getting the feedback from people.
Yeah.
And that's the best part of being on the road.
How did Frankie and the Knockouts get formed? You're out of New Jersey. How did you guys get together?
I was in a band called Bull Angus, which was on Mercury Records, toured with Rod Stewart and Deep Purple, and played the Pocono Mountain Festival with 300,000 people. It was a heavier rock band. And that band broke up, and I started to become an R&B artist. And I was on Buddha Records. Tony Camillo produced me, who produced Gladys Knight, Midnight Train to Georgia. And I just wasn't feeling the energy from my R&B. I liked the way my voice sounded, but I wasn't feeling the energy from the music. So I called up the guitar player, Billy Elworthy, that was in Bull Angus. And he was playing with a group in New York called Cherry Vanilla.
Mm-hmm.
And they ended up, I said, Billy, why don't you come out and hang at the apartment with me? Let's write some songs. So Billy came over, and I said, we can formulate like maybe a blue-eyed soul rock and roll kind of thing where we're playing a little heavier music, but I'm still singing R&B.
Yeah.
And so we started doing that, and I was selling cars out of my driveway to make enough money to pay my rent and my bills and stuff. And after 2 years of doing that, I met this guy named Bert Padel, who gave Jimmy Einer from Millennium Records a demo. And so Jimmy called me up and said, I really like these songs. And it was just me and Billy. It wasn't a group.
Yeah, yeah.
And he said, well, these songs are really good. You have a band? I said, yeah, I got a band. Sure, I got a band. And he goes, if you can write three more songs that sound as good as these, I'll give you a deal. So Billy said, I got this guy, Blake Levinson. He's a keyboard player, plays in a group with Rosetta Stone. And so he came over, and we wrote She's a Runner, and he goes, Hollywood, and a couple other songs. And I brought him back to Jimmy, and he goes, okay, I'm giving you a record deal. So I called up all of my friends that were doing the demos with me, and I said, okay, you guys want to do a record? And they said, sure. So we went in and started learning all of these songs. Now, I hadn't written Sweetheart yet. So right before we were going in the studio, I brought Jimmy Sweetheart, and he said, you know what? It's really pop. It's not really like the other songs on your record. You're a rock and roll band. And he goes, you sure you want to put that bullet in the gun? He goes, it might be a hit, but you might. And I said, put it in the gun. I said, we'll deal with it later.
Yeah.
So that was it. And Frankie and the Knockouts got born from, just my friends, calling up some friends and doing a record. And there was no band. Michael Kleffner was our manager. And he called and he said, watch, there was a show like Saturday Night Live, but it was called Friday.
Yep.
It was on Friday night.
Yeah, Fridays, and that was, I remember, that was where Michael Richards got his start.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And so he says, watch the show tonight. And I said, why? He goes, oh, my other band that I'm managing is on there, Jefferson Starship. So I'm watching, and the host comes out, and next week, special guest, Frankie and the Knockouts. And I'm like, oh, my God, there's no band. So Michael calls, and he goes, dude, he goes, next Friday, what do you think? I said, Michael, I got to tell you something. There's no band. He goes, there better be a band by next Friday because you're live. And I hadn't gigged in 3 years. And that was my first gig with Frankie and the Knockouts. Our second night, the second day was Saturday. We did American Bandstand. Sunday, we did Solid Gold. And a week later, we were on tour with the Beach Boys.
Oh, my God. That's amazing.
That was Frankie and the Knockouts.
That's amazing. So you had to get the band together before that episode of Fridays.
Correct.
Oh, man.
But we only had to learn two songs because we did Sweetheart and we did Comeback.
Yeah.
So I thought, oh, we can learn two songs and put an ending on the stuff we did in the studio. So I just used my studio guys, and we went and played.
Wow.
And, you know, and then we had to go learn a set in a week to go play with the Beach Boys.
Wow, that's unbelievable. Frankie, hang on, okay?
Sure.
Okay, Frankie Previtt is with us, and the song is called One World, and you can download it, give some money. It goes to great charity, and it's helping everybody out during this pandemic. And it's oneworldoursong.com. More with Frankie Previtt coming up right here on WGN. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, live in the Skyline studio here until 4 o'clock. We're going to talk with the co-owners of Chicago Fireboat Tours in a little bit. And our phone number is 312-981-7200. The news is next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Frankie Previtt is my guest right now, Oscar-winning songwriter, leader of the band Frankie and the Knockouts. And hey, Frankie, what's it like to collaborate with Cyndi Lauper?
She's an extraordinary artist. You know, I started writing with her in Russia. On the way to writing One World, she left her coat down in the lobby, and I had to drop it off at her room. And so I walked in, and they were jamming, the musicians, and I started singing, just jamming with them. And she came in the room and said, "You're writing with us today." And
wow.
I said, "No, I'm writing with Sergey." And she goes, "No, well, after Sergey, you're coming back, and we're going to finish this song together." So that's where our songwriting relationship started, and we came back to the States. She was doing a record, and she said, "I want you to write for me, with me on that record." So I got my cousin Dusty McCallie and myself, and we wrote a bunch of songs with her, one called "The Night You Remember," which you just played. And you know, working with her and Phil Ramone at the time, who produced a couple of the tracks, was, you know, sitting and watching an artist close their eyes and put a vocal down that is, like, close to perfect. And then she looks up and she goes, "How'd that sound?" And I go, "It sounded awesome." She goes, "I could do it better. Let me do it again." You know, so, you know, she's just an unbelievable talent. And songwriter, she's one of the best.
Yeah, I mean, she's got such an incredible voice. I mean, she's such a great singer. I think people underappreciate her. Vocally, because she's just got an incredible voice.
She just nails it every time. I mean, it's unheard of that the she just closes her eyes and goes into a trance. And it, you know, everything that comes out of her seems to be magical.
Yeah.
You know, so it's hard. It's hard when you're trying to comp three vocals, which one is better. And then she pulls that off live too. So, I mean, she's really a great artist.
Oh yeah. Yeah. It's gotta be, it had to be a great time to work with her.
Really, really, opened my eyes to a whole other world because I was, you know, after, you know, being blessed to win an Academy Award, doors were opening for me to work with the A-Team. And so, you know, you've got a chance to see what that side of life is and how, you know, superstars are treated and act and how you're accepted into that world because of, you know, a song, you know, the power of music.
Yeah, yeah.
And Time of My Life really kind of changed my life. I became a songwriter. From being an artist, I became a songwriter.
Right. Listen, you know, you mentioned you guys made your appearance on Fridays. You had to get that band together. What was it like to be on Fridays? Because you had Larry David, you had Michael Richards, all those people. What was it like, that experience?
Larry David actually is the one who introduced us. You know, when, you know, tonight, Frankie and the Knockout.
Yeah.
You know, so that was my first meeting of him. And then Madeline Kahn was on that show.
Oh, man.
Yeah. And you know, Kramer.
Yeah.
You know, from Steinfeld.
Right.
Richards. And so it was, you know, I hadn't gigged in 3 years, so it was like I was like okay, I can do this. Let me just keep my cool and go out there, and it's like riding a bike, you know, and just psyching myself up. So it was, you know, it went and came so fast, but it was it got me back on the bike and being, you know, a musician again after 3 years of not gigging.
Yeah. Yeah, that's great. That's great. Hey, yeah. You know, like I said, I saw you on the tour with Loverboy. That was the first time I saw you guys live. Was that a fun tour?
Those guys are great. I mean, I believe they're Canadian, correct?
Yeah, they are.
Yeah, just a great band, great lead singer, good songs, very good combination of Frankie Knockout, Loverboy, similar type of, you know, pop rock music.
Yeah.
And, you know, upbeat kind of music. So we were a good combination and we complemented each other.
Yeah.
So it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, I remember it being a really great show. And I took a girl on a first date to that show.
Awesome. You know, another really good band that was a good combination for us was Toto. We toured with Toto.
Oh, sure.
And that was a really ass-kicking band.
Yeah.
Toto was very well.
Yeah, very cool. Hey, Frankie, what's it like to win an Oscar? Tell me about that. Tell me about that night.
I was sitting in the middle of the row, and I told the other, you know, I said, John, Donnie, if we win this, if they call our name, don't run out and jump on the stage because we're going to be on a timer, and I'm in the middle of the row. And they're going to start the timer when you hit, you know, the stage. So I'm sitting there, and my father, I brought my mother and father.
Yeah.
And my father is listening to all the songs, and he goes, I just heard all the songs. And you're going to win. And I looked at him. I said, Dad, do not put the maloiki on me. I said, don't do that. And so I believe it was Dudley Moore and Liza Minnelli. They announced our names. And, of course, the other two writers jump up and they run up on the stage. And I'm trying to get out in the middle of the row.
Yeah.
And so a good maybe 15 seconds or so had gone by and they were standing up there. And I kind of got up there, and the first thing out of my mouth was there was a gentleman that told me that he was going to change my life and that I should write a song for this movie, Dirty Dancing. So I'd like to thank Jimmy Iovine for changing my life. That was my opening line. And I ended it with, I'd just like to thank my parents for the best duet of all.
Oh,
that's,
man.
All I re-
that's all
that's
I, you know I what? I, actually, I'll tell you something, Frankie. We have the audio.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah, let's play this back.
Well, about a year and a half ago, a gentleman called me up and told me that I should write a song for Dirty Dancing that would change my life. So I'd like to thank Jimmy Iovine for changing my life. I'd like to say that this award really belongs to all the people that were involved in making of Dirty Dancing. That includes Eleanor, Emil, Bill and Jennifer for a great duet, Patrick and Jennifer for their performance, Kenny, Mike, and Linda. I'd like to thank Vestron Pictures, RCA Records, Bert Padel and Liz, Alan Arrow D, all my friends for supporting me. the man upstairs and my parents for the best duet of all.
There you go, Frankie.
Wow, I haven't heard that in a long time.
That's great.
Wow.
Yeah, and that was a little movie that basically came out of nowhere and just became huge. I mean, nobody expected this movie called Dirty Dancing to become the phenomenon that it became.
Well, let me tell you an inside story. And I met Patrick at the end of at the Academy Awards, and he told me that there was 149 songs submitted for that last scene. Mine, or Time of My Life, was the 150th, and they filmed out of sequence, so they filmed the last scene first. And he told me we hated the movie because we didn't have an ending song, and we were getting ready to film to a track another song that wasn't an original for the movie, and your cassette, the 150th, came in.
Oh man!
And we said, we're making the movie to that song. And he goes, at the end of that filming that day, he goes, we looked at each other and went, oh my God, let's go make a movie. This is an unbelievable ending. And so Vestron Films and RCA Records really didn't like the movie. So Vestron was going to put it out for 2 weeks and go directly to DVD. RCA released Time of My Life as a single, and Vestron Films was nowhere to be found with the movie, and RCA was like, where's the movie? And they said, oh, we forgot to tell you, we moved it for the release for a month from now. And so RCA stopped promoting Time of My Life. It fell off the charts, and the movie comes out. And within the first week of the movie being out, Time of My Life was back ordered for 300,000 records.
Wow.
And before RCA could print a record, a million records were back ordered. And so really the machine of RCA Records and Vestron Films were a case of kind of being there, and Joe Public, the people, found a movie that they embraced, and a song, and Patrick, and without probably all those elements, you don't have the same phenomenon.
Yeah. Yeah, but I just remember it just coming out of nowhere and being just a massive, massive hit. It was just like this little low-budget film, you know.
$5 million.
Yeah, and man, it was just a phenomenon. It was amazing. It was amazing.
It blew my mind.
Yeah, I bet.
Before we wrap up, I had mentioned a couple of the performers that were on it, and I left out a few, and I just want to mention their names because they've all done this for free, and they deserve so much.
Sure.
You know, Michael Merrill and Renee Martin, who's a great. She's on the second half of the first verse. Ellis Hall, who we talked about, starts the second verse.
Yeah,
and then let me see who here is. Oops, let me go back. Rondell, Holly, and the girl that comes in on the bridge, Judith Glory Hill, is an unbelievable singer.
Yeah.
She was in 20 Feet from Stardom.
Yeah.
She was in that film, and she has a new album out now, and she's just an unbelievable Grammy award-winning singer.
Well, Frankie, thank you so much for joining us. The song is called One World. Everybody, you can download it and donate. It's oneworldoursong.com. Frankie, always a pleasure to talk to you, man.
Thank you, Nick. I really appreciate your support, and, you know, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay, buddy, take care. Frankie Previtt, everybody, Oscar-winning songwriter. The song is called One World. It's a new anthem for our times, and he's raising a lot of money for great causes. One World, Our Song. .com. OneWorldOurSong.com.